Welcome to the Ogletree Deacons Podcast, a brief discussion of compelling legal issues and practical insights. Please note that the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be, nor should it be construed as legal advice. You can subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. Please enjoy the program. Thank you for joining us today. I'm Jamie Petrie. I'm an immigration shareholder at Ogletree Deacons in the Austin, Texas office.
And I'm Jeff Thomas, an immigration attorney with Ogletree Deacons.
Today we're talking about the U.S. Department of Justice has issued a fact sheet with guidance on avoiding discriminatory employment practices when complying with export control laws. There have been some recent enforcement actions in this area, so the guidance is timely in helping employers remain compliant.
So, Jeff, how does the Immigration and Nationality Act prohibit employer discrimination in this context?
So the Immigration and Nationality Act, the INA, it prohibits discrimination based on citizenship, immigration status, and national origin. So U.S. employers, they must avoid discriminatory practices in hiring, firing, or recruiting decisions and must comply with INA requirements while also complying with any related export control laws. So, Jamie, what are export control laws and what do they require?
Good question. The U.S. export control laws are known as ITAR and EAR. That stands for the International Traffic in Arms Regulations, ITAR, and Export Administration Regulations, EAR. And a little bit about this, what these do is they restrict an employer from exporting certain goods, software, technology, and technical data, otherwise known as export controlled items, to someone from a country who's on a, you know, a list of countries we don't want to export to without a license.
So what are deemed exports? How are deemed exports regulated?
So deemed exports are when someone like an employer provide foreign individuals access to these export controlled items. So the easiest kind of items to think about would be technologies like encryption tech, things to do with semiconductor production, munitions, etc. Foreign individuals, including foreign employees, may require a license to access these types of controlled items, but licenses would not be required if that employee was a U.S. person.
And what is a U.S. person?
So a U.S. person is a very tricky definition. It's specifically outlined in these regulations. It includes U.S. citizens, U.S. nationals, lawful permanent residents, those are your green card holders, and other protected persons like refugees and asylees. And this gets a little bit tricky because U.S. person, as you note, is not just U.S. citizen, right? So there are other types of people with other types of documentation that would not require a license. And it's really important for people who are in an NHR, in recruiting and TA to understand the difference and to understand the special definition of U.S. person.
So circling back to the recent guidance, the fact sheet published by the Department of Justice, it provides some guidance on recruiting for jobs that may involve these export control items.
That's right. The fact sheet is super helpful. And while right now we're not seeing any settlements necessarily connected to all of the fact sheet, we do think that this is a clear indication from the Department of Justice that they are looking into these types of things and looking into hiring practices related to export control and discrimination. So a couple of tips that the Department of Justice has provided in its fact sheet are, you know, when you're discussing export control requirements with candidates or current employees, make it clear that U.S. persons means more than just U.S. citizens. Secondly, the advice is not to state in job postings or tell applicants that export control regulations require applicants to have a specific citizenship, immigration status, or national origin. That could be deemed as citizenship or national origin discrimination, and that's in contravention of the INA anti-discrimination provisions that you mentioned earlier. And then lastly, you know, don't use the export control regulations, whether that's ITAR or EAR, as reasons to reject candidates with certain citizenships, immigration statuses, or national origins. TA and HR are still held to only rejecting candidates, you know, for non-discriminatory purposes. And this does seem to be a tricky category and a tricky area for hiring professionals. And I think that's what has brought the Department of Justice to the point of actually publishing this fact sheet to advise employers on how to avoid such discrimination.
So if you're hiring for a position that involves export control technologies, and you have to go through a license assessment to determine whether or not a foreign worker may need a license to have access to that technology, how do you go through that process?
Yeah, so there's a couple of very easy practical tips here. One is to only do the export compliance assessments for those workers whose positions actually require working access to the export controlled items. So you don't want to do this on a blanket basis. You want to make sure that you're being careful and you're curating these assessments to the positions that require access to export controlled items. And then you want to let the workers know that, you know, they're providing documents about their citizenship or immigration status to determine if a license is required to these access controlled goods, technologies, or data. Again, this does not need to be a blanket basis. You want to be careful because you will have to request documentation from people when you're doing these assessments. You want to be clear that it's only for the purposes of this assessment and that it's because the position requires access to export controlled items or goods. So that's a little bit about kind of the front part of the fact sheet, talking about hiring practices and export control items. It also talks about, and some of the recent settlements have really been focused on, the I-9 part of documentation. So Jeff, let's get real basic here. What is the form I-9?
So if you're listening to this, hopefully you're familiar with the form I-9, but it's a form that every U.S. employer must complete for new hires to verify that the employee can present documents that confirm that the employee is authorized to work inside the United States.
Very good. And can employers use Form I-9 documents to determine if a foreign worker is a U.S. person for purposes of the export control assessment?
And this was a critical guidance that the Department of Justice offered in the fact sheet, that employers need to separate their export compliance assessments from the Form I-9 process. In separating the Form I-9 process from the export control process, employers need to inform workers that they're being asked for documents specific to one process or the other, either documentation and information related to whether or not the foreign worker is a U.S. person that may not require a license from the Department of Commerce to access export control technologies or goods, or that the employer is asking for documents and information related to Form I-9 completion to verify work authorization in the United States. It's important when you're going through these processes that the employer not specify documents that are required either for the Form I-9 or for the export control assessment. In the Form I-9 process, there's a list of acceptable documents that employers should present to employees, and employees can choose any acceptable documents from that list of acceptable documents for Form I-9 completion. And the employer should not use those documents to further assess whether or not the person is a U.S. person and may require a license from the Department of Commerce. In completing the Form I-9, the Department of Justice provided guidance that employers should not mark the Form I-9 or make any notes about export control requirements, and that any documents for the Form I-9 should be stored separately from documents related to export control processes.
And that's if you're keeping copies of I-9 documents, right, Jeff? Because not every employer is required. No employer is actually required to keep copies of those I-9 documents. If you do have copies, though, they want you to keep them separate.
And that really is just a best practice overall. Your I-9 process should be separate from every other onboarding or hiring process that you go through. And keeping your I-9 documentation and your I-9 process is separate from everything else.
Right. So no efficiencies to be gained here, I think, is the takeaway from the DOJ fact sheet. And an unfortunate one at that for business who we're all, you know, looking how to be more efficient, but also we want to be compliant. So compliance is going to take the front seat here over efficiency. What other guidance does the Department of Justice provide about compliance, Jeff?
So in complying with export control assessment requirements related to these controlled technologies, goods, the Department of Justice makes it clear that employers have a duty to train their personnel on how to determine whether or not someone might be a U.S. person who may not be a U.S. person, who requires a license from the Department of Commerce for access to these export-controlled items, and training to complete the Form I-9 in verifying that the person has authorization to work in the United States. The main takeaway from the Department of Justice's fact sheet is that export control assessment processes must be separate from Form I-9 work verification processes. So what are some differences between the Form I-9 compliance process and the export control assessment process with employees?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And there's a really good practical tip in here, which is the document process for these two kind of compliance initiatives needs to be kept separate. Because for the export compliance assessment, you're asking for specific documentation and you're allowed to do so. You're saying, I need to know if you're a U.S. person or not. So can you provide me with your passport biographical page, which would tell you someone's citizenship status. Where in the I-9 space, you are not allowed to ask for any specific documents. You provide the list and the person who's verifying their work authorization chooses which documents to present. So the Department of Justice has really helped us out here by saying, hey, keep them separate. If you are doing an export control assessment and asking someone for their passport and then intending to use that document to verify the I-9, well, you're complying with the export control assessment requirements, but you've also violated the I-9 requirements. So the Department of Justice, by keeping, you know, telling us and reminding employers to keep these processes separate, they're really saving us from ourselves here. You know, we may not be as efficient, but we are going to be compliant. And at the end of the day, I think compliance is going to take precedent over efficiency. Okay, so Jeff, you know, we have this really helpful fact sheet from the Department of Justice. They're trying to tell us something, right? They're trying to warn us about what to look out for. What do we think is coming next? Like, what do you think we're going to see from the Department of Justice? And how would we know what they're doing, what investigations are settling? Tell me a little bit about that.
So what we can know from last year is that the Department of Justice was very active in reviewing these issues with employers, looking for violations of the intersection between export control laws and immigration laws as they relate to the Form I-9 and verifying a person's work authorization. So because we know that the Department of Justice was active last year in these enforcement actions, what we're seeing now are settlements that the Department of Justice is publishing on their website to give employers even more guidance on how to avoid some of these issues and really increasing the pressure on employers to be familiar with these fact sheets and other guidance that the Department of Justice has published to keep employers compliant with immigration laws while they're also complying with export control laws.
Okay, so we've kind of packed a lot in here. Where can I find more information in addition to this very helpful fact sheet that the Department of Justice has published?
So the Department of Justice has published their fact sheet through the Civil Rights Division, and the Civil Rights Division on their website has multiple guidance letters and other information for employers in remaining compliant with INA and other requirements. Also, if you have questions about export control items or export control regulations, you can look at the U.S. Department of State's Directorate of Defense Trade Controls.
And there are also attorneys out there that basically specialized in the export control items. Jeff and I are not export control attorneys. We're immigration attorneys. But there is a whole specialization available out there in addition to the plethora of resources available on the websites.
Thank you for joining us on the Ogletree Deacons podcast. You can subscribe to our podcasts on Apple Podcasts or through your favorite podcast service. Please consider rating and reviewing so that we may continue to provide the content that covers your needs. And remember, the information in this podcast is for informational purposes only and is not to be construed as legal advice.